Hello, this is Richard Davis, welcoming you to At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not-so-old. Today's programme is completely taken up with an extended feature about the Regency Townhouse, which is a Grade 1 listed terraced house in Brunswick Square in Hove. It was built in the mid-1820s, and it's currently being developed as a heritage centre and museum. Maya Davis went along to have a look round, and in the hallway she met up with her guide for the day, and began by asking him who he was and what his function was in connection with the townhouse.
I'm Paul Couchman. I do lots of things at the townhouse. I do historical cooking, I do social media, and I do publicity. And today I'm going to show you around the townhouse, especially the servants' basement, which is quite exciting.
Oh, right, that looks really good, because I've just come into the townhouse and it looks as though there's an awful lot going on. There are people everywhere. There's an absolutely fabulous stained glass window over the door, which I can see from in here. There's all sorts of stairways. It looks a little bit bare at the moment, with boards and dust and some bits of it obviously in better repair than the others. Can you tell me a little bit about where you are with the project and what's going on?
Yes, of course. It's a restoration project. Some of the rooms are completely finished, but a lot of the project is still in, well, the state you see it here, actually. I mean, well, the good thing about it is you can really see the progress of what we're doing as you go through the building. And I think that's quite fascinating. That's what our visitors find quite fascinating. You go to National Trust property, everything's finished, everything's complete. And here you see all the different stages that the property has been in. So sometimes it's still modern bits are left. You've got bits that are completely restored, and you have bits that are sort of halfway in between. And that's, I think, what makes it quite fascinating for people.
How long's it been going on then?
Well, Nick bought the building in 1984, well, parts of the building. So he bought the basement first, and then gradually acquired all the other flats upwards. And then in 1992, we got another basement. It's the basement of number 10. And that's our jewel, really, because that's been completely untouched. And that's quite special when you go into it. But the basement here, we've actually got a kitchen that functions now, and we do an event called Dine Like a Servant down there. So we serve historical food to paying guests, and the money helps to go into, well, all goes into the restoration.
That sounds really interesting. Shall we go down to the basement and have a look then?
Yeah, absolutely. Come down with me.
So we've just come down what looks like a completely restored wooden staircase with a sort of lash-up handrail at the moment and bits of bare wire everywhere. We're now standing in the basement. There's a tiled floor. I can see some laths and a somewhat dodgy ceiling at the moment, which I assume is being restored.
Absolutely.
And quite a long corridor. Tell us a little bit more about what's going on here, Paul.
Okay, so the staircase we've just put back in, about a year ago actually. We used to have to walk round. We used to leave the house and go round to the front and come down through. And now we've got this wonderful staircase that links the two parts of the house together again, as it would have been. So this is basically a servant staircase, which takes you from the ground floor to the basement, which we call the servants' offices. So it's basically where the servants worked. And at the very front, in front of you there, you've got a housekeeper's room. Next to the housekeeper's room, there would have been a wine cellar. Next door, if you know from Downton Abbey, we have something called servants' room, servants' hall, actually.
Which at the moment is full of people doing extremely busy things on their hands and knees, and paint pots and ladders and all sorts of things. What's going to happen down here eventually?
Well, if you look over there, you can see the window that's been taken out. We're going to put a window back in there again and build up a wall. This room will become another research room, actually. So we've put in things like cupboards. You can see on the wall there, the fixed cupboard has gone back in again. We could be painting the wood. The wood will be wood-grained as well. And it's got these beautiful windows. We call them borrowed light windows because they allow light to come into the hallway from this room.
Are they original?
We put them back in again. So they would have been here. They were taken out. And we found the dimensions and put them back exactly where they would have been originally.
So they're reconstructed rather than actual genuine windows
exactly.
Put back.
Yeah, exactly.
And did you have problems sourcing the glass, or are you just using modern glass?
We're using a sort of, if you look at the glass, you can see little bubbles in it. So we have actually A sort of modern variation on old crown glass. So it looks slightly like crown glass. It isn't. It's crown glass, and these sheets is very hard to come by now and very expensive. So we've got sort of an in-between version we've done for this. But it gives the effect.
And the window, the other window that's going to be put back, looks rather like a very, very large door. So I suppose it's a sort of French window, is it, leading out to a yard?
Well, the thing was, they put in a French window, and what we're doing is taking the French window out again. We're going to be bricking up that lower section. And if you look by the fireplace there, you can see some sashes, and they will go into the top. And luckily, inside, when they put the replacement window in, they left all the old wood around the edges. So we're going to reuse that again. And that's the big thing about the townhouse. Whenever we can use original materials that are still in the building, we do. We only replace when things are rotten or destroyed or you know, all disappeared in this case. When the windows go completely, we have to put completely new windows in. But as much as possible, we try and retain the fabric of the building. It's really important.
That sounds really good. Okay, let's carry on. Well, we've come along a long corridor with the butler's room on the right, which at the moment is something we can't see, and we're now in the kitchen, which is really very, very large indeed by modern standards. Not quite as huge as the one in the Royal Pavilion, but still pretty impressive, with what looks like some original china and jelly moulds and preserves and a lovely old weighing machine and all sorts of other things.
I'm just saying a bit about the kitchen. Above you, you probably noticed a very large skylight. The kitchen is semi-detached, so it's semi-detached from the building, which is because the range that would have been there in the chimney place would have burned constantly, and the risk of fire in these spaces was considerable. So the idea was if it's semi-detached, the kitchen could burn down without too much problem with the rest of the house. You could just rebuild the kitchen quite easily and quite cheaply, whereas the house would have held the most expensive things possible, and you didn't want that burning down. As you can see now, people are here busy. We're putting some doors back in the room. So it is still a work in progress. It's almost finished, but there's still bits and pieces to do. We're going to put a larder back through that door there. So there's a door here, and that's where we'll be storing all the produce as well, in the original larder. And over there, through those windows, we have a scullery. And we have a sink in the same place they would have had a sink, which I think is quite poetic in a way. So when we're standing doing the washing up, you can imagine them standing doing the washing up exactly the same place.
Let's move on. Where do you want to take us next?
I can probably show you best the other basement. So we have two basements. You're in the more modern one, really. We're going back and see the proper authentic basement that was bought in the 1990s with a Heritage Lottery Fund grant.
Wow. OK, let's do that. Well, we've actually come outside and walked down the road a little bit into another house, and we're now in the basement of that one. In what looks very much like a housekeeper's room, in pretty good condition. There's a nice old fireplace, there's a wall cupboard, some shutters that have just been opened so we can look out of the window, painted a delicate shade of pale green, bit of a rug on the floor, and a huge walk-in cupboard with shelves. And are those genuine buns on the table? No, I don't think so, somehow. And some old dolly-style pegs. Tell us a little bit about this room.
Well, just start with the bread rolls. They are genuine. I made them in the kitchen in the other place, and we've just kept them for a while, so they're not fresh. I wouldn't advise people to eat them either. They wouldn't be very tasty. Yeah, I mean, the housekeeper's room, as you now see it, has been... we spent about 2 years doing this. But the floor that you see underneath here was a concrete floor. We had to take that up. As you can imagine, that's quite a horrendous large job. And lay down a proper timber floor. So this timber floor that you see here has come from a factory from roughly the same period, so it's the 1830s.
So it's genuine timber from a genuine place of the same period?
Exactly, yeah. So there's that much detail goes into these things. We've put a fireplace back in the grate there as well. All the wood as well around the room has been oak grained. So it's a paint effect. It's the wood has been made to look like oak. The housekeeper was a higher servant. She was high in the servant hierarchy. And so the decor in her room reflected that. So we have a sort of middle class like a decor to the room. So nothing too grand, obviously, because she didn't live upstairs. So there was still a distinction. But downstairs, for the servant, she had quite a luxurious working space. I should point out, I mean, she didn't actually sleep in this room. So this is a working space. she has windows that look to the front, so she can see the comings and goings of the tradesmen. So she can check the goods that they deliver, payment, those sort of things she can arrange. But she would sleep upstairs in the attic at the very back. So she'd have her own bedroom.
Quite a long walk up then.
Indeed, yes. Yes, about five floors, yeah.
Cool. And are you eventually going to open this as part of the exhibition then?
Absolutely, as part of the museum really. So we're opening a museum and heritage centre eventually. We do operate as such, but we don't have regular set times when we're open. In the future we will do that. And this is the first room that we've restored. The other rooms haven't been restored yet, and the idea is to do all the rooms to this sort of standard. So all the rooms will look like they did in roughly 1829, 1831, that sort of period.
OK, tell us what you're going to show us next.
We'll go and have a look quickly in the wine cellar, because every good house should have a large wine cellar. And this one certainly does have a large one.
Yes, that is a very substantial wine cellar.
Do you want to come in? You'll probably hear it through the acoustics, actually. You can hear how deep it is.
Well, we're now in the depths of the wine cellar, and there are enormous cubby holes to left and right, going all the way up from floor to ceiling. Tell us a little bit more about how this wine cellar would have been used. Was it just for storing wine?
Yeah. I mean, the thing was about it, and if you imagine, you can see how big it is now. So the contents of the wine cellar would be worth three times the cost of the house, basically. So extreme amounts of money. Wine was very expensive back then because it had to be imported, and importation was very, very dangerous in times of war and all sorts of things. So a lot of it came from Portugal. So just imagine all these spaces filled with wine. It's quite a substantial amount, isn't it?
Well, just to give people some idea, we're actually standing in a space that would make quite a substantial bedsit on its own. And possibly larger than bedrooms in some modern houses. And you have to imagine this full of wine. In fact, there's probably more storage here than there would be in your average wine shop now.
Yeah, indeed. As I just said, the wine was expensive. And so we've got some extra security features here. I'm just going to close the door now. You can probably. So we've got a lead-lined door on the back there. Do you see?
Good grief.
And above you, you've got brick vaulting. So the brick vaulting is to stop people coming from above. Because what usually happened in these houses, if you didn't have this brick vaulting, people would get into the house, break through the floorboards and come in and get the wine through that way. If you imagine one or two bottles of wine, we'd have fed a family for a while. So, and there was a lot of poverty in the area at the time. So there was a great incentive to steal. So all this protection was necessary. So you've got two doors, open it again. But you've got a second door here as well. And this is a nice feature on the lock here. You can see the wax. So the master of the house would stamp his seal in wax on the lock to make sure that the servants didn't tamper with it while he was away. And the wax is still here. It's been painted over. You can see the red of it there. So that's the original wax. So this is one door, and you've got the second door, which leads to a smaller cellar, which is the day cellar. So that's the cellar that the butler would have a key for. So he would have access to here, but only the master of the house would have access to this secondary cellar. So you'd take wine from here and pop them into the day cellar to give access to the butler.
To give you some idea of what's going on then, if you would be standing in the undercroft of a monastery or something like that, would it be very much the same sort of feeling?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Only with wine?
A crypt in a church as well. It does look a bit like a crypt, doesn't it? It's incredible. Yeah, it's a beautiful space, and it's got a lot of atmosphere. Shall we come out now?
Good idea. Well, we're now in the servants' hall, which, as you can probably tell from the echo, isn't particularly furnished or anything. I notice there's lots of green paint around. Is that the original?
We've got two or three layers, actually. So if you look over on that side, there's some green paint here. And then under that, you see a wallpaper layer. And then you see another painted layer underneath. So we think this painted layer was the very first layer. And then this wallpaper goes on next, and the green next on that. And you get another layer of paper here.
And the wallpaper has got quite a delicate pattern on it, hasn't it?
Well, it's got a whole story to it as well. They used to call it sanitary ware. It has little dots on it, if you can see. These dots imitate the legs of flies, or the marks that flies make when they put their little feet onto the wallpaper. And this is to hide the dirt. So you've got a wallpaper that already has dirt marks on it. They often did this. They often did it in woodwork as well. They would put a sort of spatter effect on in kitchens to hide fat stains as well. So it's sort of preventative.
That would make cleaning either unnecessary or very difficult.
Indeed. Yes, yes. I mean, it's an early form. I mean, this obviously goes out of fashion later on.
Well, yes, otherwise they wouldn't have covered it over and painted it,
indeed,
would they?
Indeed, indeed. But what's interesting, you can see there's only a few layers. This whole basement hasn't been decorated much, and that's why we've got all these old traces of paper. In normal basements, all this disappears. The walls are completely taken, you know, stripped back, new plasters put on. And we're very lucky to have all these traces here. I mean, you can see, even see where candles might have burned against the walls. There's a black stain here. All that history is still in the building. Yeah.
How old is the wallpaper then?
We think it's the second layer. So you've got about 1829. The building is built, and so we think about 1840, roughly. So you've got 10 layers with this sort of painted layer, and then we think with the new change of owner, you get some new wallpaper going on the walls. I mean, it's interesting, the old owner, Thompson Hankey, had dealings with the slave trade. We think maybe, this is fanciful, but that he treated his servants better, because often wallpapers aren't used in servant quarters, but they are here. So we think maybe there's a sort of idea of guilt or something, that he treats his servants well by giving them wallpaper in the servants' hall.
Well, that sounds really interesting. And how many servants would have been kept in this servants' hall then?
So a house like this would have between eight and 12 servants. So you've got different categories of servants. Not all of them would have slept in the house. Some of them would have slept above the stables. If you look through the window here, above the kitchen, you can actually see the old stables. It's no longer part of our house, but you can see where they were. You can see the windows still. That's also fascinating. So there would have been bedrooms up there as well, mainly for the male servants. Mm-hmm. So the male servants would tend to sleep away from the house. The females upstairs.
And no communication at night.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There was strict, I'd say, that split between male and female servants. Yeah.
Well, that's probably wise. Who knows? You can't tell, really. It depends what you think of what's been going on in Downton Abbey.
Indeed.
But it's a huge room.
Yeah, I mean, I'll have a look at some details I should point out. We've got a beautiful flagstone floor. I mean, that flagstone floor goes right for the house. That's an amazing survivor as well. The floors get replaced later on with ceramic tiles in the early Victorian period, about 1860 onwards. But we have here the original flagstones. And you can see how, as you walk over them, pieces come off and you get a beautiful lamination on the tiles, which shows shows how people used it. It shows the sort of passage of time as well, which I think is quite fascinating. And these beautiful inbuilt cupboards. We've got these curved corners there on the edges. You'd pay a lot of money now to get carpentry like that.
I think you probably would.
But it's here in the servants' hall. You know, beautiful, beautiful details. And we're very lucky to have that, the original fireplace as well.
So what are you going to show us next?
Let me think. We'll go through to the main kitchen and we'll take a detour on the way to the meat safe, which every house should have.
Well, we've come down a corridor that's still got some Victorian paint on the walls, and we're now in something that is probably the equivalent of the hotel bathroom. At least that's what it looks like. I bet that's not what it was, though.
No, we've got what we're standing in is a meat safe.
But it's huge.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of meat. I mean, it's an early form of refrigeration. We've got over there, where there now is a window, would have been the back door, and through there, fresh air would come, and so this area would be relatively cool compared to the kitchen. And if you look above you, you can see hooks. So there's lots of original hooks here, beautiful, eh? Where meat would have hung. So you've got sort of cooked meats as well, as well as fresh meat, so they kept it all in here. And the idea is it's cooled from the kitchen, so you can keep it. It's a really lucky survivor, because usually these things disappear when fridges come along. You don't need them anymore. Because this is such a big house, we think that's why this has remained, because you've got enough space to put the fridge somewhere else, so you don't bother getting rid of this. But we're very, very lucky. There's original shelves here as well. Again, a flagstone floor here. And the floor, it slopes down a bit to relieve the juices and the blood.
They thought of everything, didn't they?
Again, yes, indeed.
And those hooks look quite vicious.
Yeah, they're sharp up there at the edges and quite high up as well. Mm. But again, you can see all the original paintwork on here as well. And this mesh, we haven't explained, there is a sort of mesh which stops flies getting in. So it's a bit like a small, people have described it as a sort of a small prison. I mean, we're basically standing in a small prison with this sort of mesh against it to stop rats as well getting in, rats, flies, anything getting in to get to the meat. Yeah.
And it's metal, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And very hard to find because we need to replace some certain sections of it. Certain sections at the back have gone. It's impossible to find now. It's something that just gets destroyed. People have no need for it anymore. But, yeah, very beautiful, actually. It's beautiful the way the light comes through it. So I showed you the kitchen in the other basement, and we've got a repeat, really. So we've got a skylight, a very large skylight. It's a larger kitchen, if you look around, than the other space. And it looks, well, you can probably describe it better, but it's much more of a workspace at the moment.
Well, it is very much a work in progress, isn't it? There's quite a lot of brick. There's some walls that clearly haven't got anything much on them. And at the moment, it's being used by some very industrious people doing some clever things with saws and bits of wood. Anyone like to explain what we're doing?
We're working on three doorways. The doorways are not here in this room, but the doors for the doorways are those you see leaning up against the wall in various parts of their eventual appearance. These are the linings to the walls on each side of the doorway. You see this here?
Oh, yes, right.
The doors, of course, speak for themselves, but obviously these linings here have to be matched very carefully with the precise size of the doors, which we've been checking earlier this morning, or at least our trained carpenter, this chap Hugo over here, he's been supervising things, and then volunteers like me and Nikki that you see over there are doing the straightforward bit, shall we say, having listened carefully to the people who really know what they're doing.
So basically you're restoring the door frames and the doors.
You couldn't have chosen a better way of putting it. I wish I had.
And for the record, could you just tell us your name and what your role is here?
Oh, my name is Tom Meekings. I suppose probably the oldest volunteer they've ever had. Certainly the oldest that they've now got. I enlisted, I think, under the heading of a menial labourer, as it were. Prepared to do almost anything in the usual run of DIY things. But, of course, that puts you in a good position because you don't have the ultimate decisions to make about precisely what should be done or precisely how to do it. So I just follow along behind the people who really know and do the best I can, which means that you get some satisfaction out of being involved in things that you only three-quarters know about. And socially, it's a very rewarding experience for somebody who's been retired for 30 years, as I have.
So you're in your 90s?
95, to be precise, yes.
Good heavens, you don't look it.
There's no comment that can cover that.
And are you on the lookout for any more expert DIY people to volunteer?
I understand that they're always very welcome as volunteers, yes. On the other hand, what happens here, of course, is in a sense a sort of amateur training course in all sorts of skills that most people don't have. If you look over on that side where some of these plaster moulds are stored, that's another important area in which an amateur can come in, be instructed as to what to do, and to feel that he's been in contact with another skill that he perhaps knew nothing about before.
Well, that's very interesting. Thank you very much, Tom. I'll let you get back to work.
How kind.
Paul? Paul, tell us a little bit about the history of the house. When was it built and who for example?
Okay, so the whole square was built in phases, actually, from 1824 onwards. Our house was advertised in 1829 for sale. What you're seeing, really, what I'd like to say to visitors, it's a bit like Milton Keynes of its time. So it's basically a new town, and we have... like in any new town, you have lots of different types of houses for different types of people. So the square itself would have been the upper classes. So ridiculous wealth. They would have been the Russian oligarchs of their time. They often would have just had one house here. They would have had three houses. So this would have been a sort of seaside house. But we've got three types. We've got the thin, narrow ones. We've got middle-sized ones, which the townhouse is one. And then you've got the larger, wider ones, which number 10 is one as well. So we've got the basement 10. But the house itself is very wide and very big. So you've got the upper classes here. Either side, you've got Brunswick Street East and Brunswick Street West. And these are the Mews Streets. So that's where the working classes would have lived. So small businesses, maybe one-man businesses that would have catered for the horses and the carriages, those sort of things, and all the other businesses surrounding horses and delivering. And then outside of that, you've got Waterloo Street, and that's where the middle classes would have lived. So you've got people like the solicitors that would have worked for the people that lived in the square here. So you've got a whole microcosm, and the church and pubs, all these things, a small council office, a fire station, and a police station. So all part of Brunswick Town. So this is where we are. So our house is within Brunswick Town. And also in the middle, of course, you've got a great big green space and the sea just looking over there in that direction as well. So it's very open. And there's lots of space.
And would there have been stables attached to the house?
Yeah, yeah. So every house went through to stables at the back. It's got very, very long plots. And those stables are then accessed by, as I said earlier, Brunswick Street East and West. So those are the service streets. And that's where the carriage would come round to. So you take the carriage from that side all the way to the front.
Do we know who the first owner of the house was?
It's hard to tell for 13 because we think it was rented out a lot of the time. And people who rent tend not to leave so many records. So it's all very sketchy up until about the 1880s. We do have records then. Number 10, though, we do know. The Cunninghams were the first people to live there. And then Cunninghams moved out, and then you get the Hankies. So I mentioned the Hankies before. He had Thompson Hankey, had interest in the slave trade. And they were incredibly rich. I mean, you'd have to be incredibly rich to buy a property like number 10. Yeah, so they're very interesting. And we do have actually a portrait. One of the relatives has come forward with a portrait recently of him. So we actually have a likeness of him, which is fascinating. So you can actually see what he looked like. And he looked very kind and gentle.
But you can't always tell, can you?
You can't always tell. No, and portraits often are deceptive.
And was this building eventually turned into flats?
Yeah, the history of the building's quite interesting. Right up into the 1940s, 50s, it was occupied as one house. So there were a succession of doctors that worked here and had surgeries here and that sort of thing. They left and the house was split up into flats in the 1960s. The person who lives at the top, Diana, came then, and she's here still now. So she's in her early 90s, and she lived here from about 1963 onwards. That's quite incredible. But Nick came into the whole picture about 1984. That's when the townhouse project was started. Nick Tyson is the curator and the founder of the whole project, really. And he's been doing it since 1984, right from the very start.
We're in one of the rooms that's used for an exhibition at the moment, but can you tell me what this room actually was and what you're doing with it?
Originally, this was the dining room of the house. And if you look round, you can see this really dark sort of purple colour. It's a very masculine-looking space. And this is the room where I tell visitors, you always have to use your imagination here, which we can do on the radio quite easily, actually. So you can imagine in the middle of this room would have been a large table with the finest table in and set for 23 people. Absolutely piled up with food. I mean, food is one of my passions as well, and I've cooked some of the dishes that they would have eaten, but they didn't do things by halves. The food would have been completely covered the table, and they wouldn't have been able to eat it. The food would eventually end up downstairs. So when we do dine like a servant, we actually, you know, the servants would have eaten leftovers because there would have been a lot of them, and the leftovers would have been just as good as the food upstairs because it was the food upstairs. The servants ate very, very well. And if you look around, you can see, especially above, you can see this beautiful cornicing, these great big acanthus leaves. So if you go into earlier Georgian properties, you get really small, refined decoration. And here, everything's enlarged and made to look bigger. It's quite grotesque in a way. It's showing off. It's showing how much money you had. It's showing that you could afford plasterers to come along and make these gigantic plaster mouldings for you. And if you look around the square, people have different size mouldings and different houses. So you can see it really was, you know, keeping up with the Joneses. Even the skirting boards, you see all these different layers, intricate layers of wooden mouldings that they used. Again, all very expensive. Before proper mechanisation of carpentry, you've got these great big board at the top, very intricate, tiny little bits of wood. People who came for dinner would have known that cost a lot of money. And so, they would have been impressed by it.
Yeah, right. Thanks very much. Well, we've come upstairs now and we're in another very, very large room. I suppose this would have been a drawing room or a room for entertaining people. It seems to be very, very large indeed, with an amazing ceiling rose. In fact, two amazing ceiling roses. In fact, it looks as though it was two rooms, or it's an antechamber and then a main room. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, we're standing in a sort of framework here, an archway. There would have been doors separating these two spaces. So we have two drawing rooms. Back drawing room and front drawing room. If you can imagine, if you visited the house in the mornings, you would come to this room first. So this would be the receiving room for the lady of the house. In the afternoon, when the guests come, these doors here would have opened up and you've got these two spaces. The sun would have come through about 5 o'clock. It comes through the windows here, illuminating your guests as they come up the stairs and enter this beautiful space. And again, we have to use our imagination here. The floor would have been covered with a beautiful Brussels carpet. That would have been all the way to the edges. And then we get lots and lots of furniture that can be moved around. There's a pianoforte over there, actually. But that would have been there alongside a harp. We'd have had small occasional tables and lots of chairs that could have been moved around as well. You've got these very large windows that look out onto the square.
And again, very luxurious ceiling moulding and cornices and all sorts of different decorations this time. Something that looks like glorified cabbages coming down from the ceiling, but I don't suppose they are.
Yes, they are beautiful.
Presumably there'd been a huge great chandelier.
Yeah, again, it's another thing you have to imagine. Two huge chandeliers in these rooms and also downstairs in the dining room. Yes. And you're seeing a sort of skeleton at the moment. You're seeing the room completely bare. Mm. You're not seeing the luxury that would have been here, all the fine chinaware and silverware that would have been displayed on the mantelpieces, on tables around the room. You're not seeing that.
On the other hand, it does make sense of what you read in the works of Jane Austen about a morning room.
Yes.
Because you can see that the smaller room, the one we came in through, faces east.
Yes.
And so you would use that in the morning to get the sun. And the other one would be available for afternoon tea and callers.
Indeed. And you have to imagine as well, I mean, it's very warm today, but when it's cold, they would have followed the sun. So you're in rooms where the sun is, and then when the sun moves, you move to the room where the sun is, and you constantly do that. And so you've got the luxury of doing that in a house this size.
Is the house open to the public? And if so, how do they come and visit you?
Well, there's a few ways to do it. And we do have open days where people can come. And there is one coming up on the 18th of August. We're open for the Brunswick Festival. And we do mini tours, so we can get absolutely free. And people come in and just get a taste of the house. We do guided tours throughout the year, and you have to book for those. And people come for dining events, they come for exhibitions. People hire out the space for other things as well. So we're often open. So we don't have set opening times, we're often open.
Is there a phone number that people can use if they want to contact you?
Well, I mean, to be modern, the best way to contact us is really just type in Regency Townhouse into Google, and you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, everywhere, really.
OK, thanks very much.
Maya Davis has been looking around the Regency Townhouse in Brunswick Square, Hove. Her guide was Paul Catchman. As Paul was saying, the house isn't open to the public on a regular basis at the moment, but it is open quite often for such things as exhibitions and functions, and there are guided tours from time to time. You can find out more by going to their website, which is at www.rth.org.uk. That's www.rth.org.uk. or you can phone them on Brighton 206 306. That's 01273 206 306. You can also contact them by email, and the address is office@rth.org.uk. That's office@rth.org.uk. As Paul was saying, they are having an open day on Saturday the 18th of August from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. when you'll be able to have a mini tour of the house, and you'll be able to get refreshments in the basement kitchen that Maya was looking at earlier in the tour. You don't need to book in advance for that. You can just turn up any time between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. and the house is at 13 Brunswick Square, Hove. There are going to be some more open days on a couple of weekends in September, which is part of the Brighton and Hove Open Door Heritage Open Days scheme. That takes place on the 6th to the 9th of September and the 13th to the 16th of September. We'll be giving you more information about that in a forthcoming programme. And that brings us to the end of our programme for this time. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this extended tour of the Regency Townhouse in Brunswick Square in Hove. There'll be another edition of At Home This Morning in a fortnight's time, and that'll be presented by Chris English. And I'll be back with you in 4 weeks' time. In the meantime, it just remains for me, Richard Davis, on behalf of Grey Matters Productions, to thank everyone who's taken part in the programme, with a special thanks to our guide, Paul Couchman. So from me, Richard Davis, on behalf of Grey Matters Productions, it's farewell until we meet again. Goodbye.
At Home This Morning is a Grey Matters production for Radio Reverb.